She doesn't weigh anything, he protested. I picked her up. He was nearly right. Megan weighed little more than a sack of flour, bones and skin and hair and teeth, and that's about it. I carried her into Evan's room, put her in the empty bed, and piled 6 layers of blankets over her quaking little body. I told Sam to fetch my rifle from the hall.
Sullivan, Ben said from the doorway. This doesn't fit.
I nodded. Worse than the odds of her lucking into this hotel at random were the odds of her surviving this weather in her summer outfit. Ben and I were thinking the same thing. 20 minutes after us hearing the chopper, little Miss Megan appeared on our doorstep. She didn't wander in here on her own. She was delivered. They know we're here, I said.
But instead of firebombing the building, they drop her in. Why?
Sam came back with my rifle. He said,
That's Megan. We met on the bus on the way to Camp Haven, Cassie.
Small world, huh? I pushed him away from the bed toward Ben.
Thoughts?
He rubbed his chin. I rubbed my neck. Too many thoughts skittering around both our heads. I stared at him rubbing his chin, and he stared at me rubbing my neck, and that's when he said,
Tracker. They've implanted her with a pellet.
Of course. That must be why Ben's in charge. He's the idea man. I massaged the back of Megan's pencil-thin neck, probing for the telltale lump. Nothing. I looked at Ben and shook my head.
They know we'd look there, he said impatiently. Search her. Every inch, Sullivan. Sam, you come with me.
Why can't I stay?
Sam whined. After all, he just reunited with a long-lost friend.
You want to see a naked girl?
Ben made a face.
Gross.
Ben pushed Sam out the door and backed out of the room. I dug my knuckles into my eyes. Damn it. God damn it. I pulled the covers to the foot of the bed, exposing her wasted body to the dying light of a midwinter's evening. Covered in scabs and bruises and open sores and layers of dirt and grime, whittled down to her bones by the horrible cruelty of indifference and the brutal indifference of cruelty. She was one of us, and she was all of us. She was the other's masterwork, their magnum opus, humanity's past and its future, what they had done and what they promised to do, and I cried. I cried for Megan, and I cried for me, and I cried for my brother, and I cried for all the ones too stupid or unlucky to be dead already. Suck it up, Sullivan. We're here, then we're gone, and that was true before they came. That's always been true. The others didn't invent death. They just perfected it. Gave death a face to put back in our face because they knew that was the only way to crush us. It won't end on any continent or ocean, no mountain or plain, jungle or desert. It will end where it began, where it had been from the beginning, on the battlefield of the last beating human heart. I stripped her of the filthy, threadbare summer clothes. I spread her arms and legs like the Da Vinci drawing of the naked dude inside the box contained within the circle. I forced myself to go slowly, methodically, starting with her head and moving down her body. I whispered to her, I'm sorry, I'm so sorry. Pressing, kneading, probing. I wasn't sad anymore. I thought of Vosh's finger slamming down on the button that would fry my 5-year-old brother's brains, and I wanted to taste his blood so badly my mouth began to water. You say you know how we think? Then you know what I'm going to do. I'll rip your face off with a pair of tweezers. I'll tear your heart out with a sewing needle. I'll bleed you out with 7 billion tiny cuts, one for each one of us. That's the cost. That's the price. Get ready, because when you crush the humanity out of humans, you're left with humans with no humanity. In other words, you get what you pay for, motherfucker. Chapter 37. I called Ben into the room. Nothing, I told him. And I checked. Everywhere.
What about her throat?
Ben said quietly. He could hear the residual rage in my voice. He got that he was talking to a crazy person and had to tread lightly.
Right before she fainted, she said her throat hurt.
I nodded.
I looked. There's no pellet in her, Ben.
Are you positive? My throat hurts is a very weird thing for a freezing, malnourished kid to say the minute they show up.
He sidled over to the bed, I don't know, maybe because he was concerned I might jump him in a moment of misplaced fury. Not that that's ever happened.
He gingerly pressed one hand to her forehead while prying her mouth open with the other. Stuck his eye close.
Hard to see anything, he muttered.
That's why I use this, I said, handing him Sam's camp-issued penlight. He shone the light down her throat.
It's pretty red, he observed.
Right, which is why she said it hurt. Ben scratched his stubble, worrying over the problem.
Not help me, or I'm cold, or even resistance is futile, just my throat hurts.
I crossed my arms over my chest. Resistance is futile, really? Sam was hovering in the doorway, big brown saucer eyes.
Is she okay, Cassie? He asked.
She's alive, I said.
She swallowed it,
Ben said.
The idea, man.
You didn't find it because it's in her stomach.
Those tracking devices are the size of a grain of rice, I reminded him. Why would swallowing one hurt her throat?
I'm not saying the device hurt her throat. Her throat has nothing to do with it.
Then why are you so worried about it being sore?
Here's what I'm worried about, Sullivan.
He was trying very hard to stay calm because clearly somebody had to be.
Her showing up out of the blue like this could mean a lot of things, but none of those things could be a good thing. In fact, it can only be a bad thing. A very bad thing made even badder by the fact that we don't know the reason she was sent here.
Badder?
Ha ha, the dumb jock who can't talk the Queen's English. I swear to God, the next person who corrects my grammar gets punched in the face.
I sighed. The rage was leeching out of me, leaving me a hollow, bloodless, human-shaped lump. Ben looked at Megan for a long moment.
We have to wake her up, he decided.
Then Dumbo and Poundcake crowded into the room.
Don't tell me, Ben said to Poundcake, who of course wouldn't. You didn't find nothing.
Anything, Dumbo corrected him. Ben didn't punch him in the face, but he did hold out his hand.
Give me your canteen.
He unscrewed the cap and held the container over Megan's forehead. A drop of water hung quivering on the lip for an eternity. Before eternity ended, a croaky voice spoke up behind us.
I wouldn't do that if I were you.
Evan Walker was awake. Chapter 38. Everybody froze. Even the drop of water swelling at the edge of the canteen's mouth held still. From his bed, Evan watched us with red, fever-bright eyes, waiting for someone to ask the obvious question, which Ben finally did.
Why?
Waking her like that could make her take a very deep breath, and that would be bad.
Ben turned to face him. The water dribbled onto the carpet.
What the hell are you talking about?
Evan swallowed, grimacing from the effort. His face was as white as the pillowcase beneath it.
She is implanted, but not with a tracking device.
Ben's lips tightened into a hard, white line. He got it before the rest of us. He whipped on Dumbo and Poundcake.
Out! Sullivan, you and Sam, too.
I'm not going anywhere, I told him.
You should, Evan said. I don't know how finely it's been calibrated.
How finely what's been calibrated to what? I demanded.
The incendiary device to CO2.
His eyes cut away. The next words were hard for him.
Our breath, Cassie.
Everybody understood by that point. But there's a difference between understanding and accepting. The idea was unacceptable. After all we had experienced, there were still places our minds simply refused to go.
Get downstairs now, all of you,
Ben snarled. Evan shook his head.
Not far enough. You should leave the building.
Ben grabbed Dumbo's arm with one hand and Poundcake's with the other and slung them toward the door. Sam had backed into the bathroom entrance, tiny fist pressed against his mouth.
Also, somebody should open that window, Evan gasped.
I pushed Sam into the hall, trotted over to the window, and pushed hard against the frame. But it wouldn't budge, probably frozen shut. Ben pushed me out of the way and smashed out the glass with the butt of his rifle. Freezing air rushed into the room. Ben strode back to Evan's bed and considered him for a second before grabbing a handful of his hair and yanking him forward.
You son of a bitch!
Ben! I put my hand on his arm. Let him go! He didn't—
Oh, right, I forgot. He's a good evil alien.
He let go. Evan fell back. He didn't have the strength to stay up. Then Ben suggested he do something to himself that was anatomically impossible. Evan's eyes cut over to me. In her throat. Suspended directly above the epiglottis.
She's a bomb,
Ben said, his voice quavering with rage and disbelief.
They took a child and turned her into an IED.
Can we remove it? I asked. Evan shook his head.
How? That's what she's asking you, dipshit,
Ben barked.
The explosive is connected to a CO2 detector embedded in her throat. If the connection's lost, it detonates.
That doesn't answer my question, I pointed out. Can we remove it without blowing ourselves into orbit?
It's feasible.
Feasible. Feasible.
Ben was laughing this weird, hiccuping kind of laugh. I was worried that he might be falling over the proverbial edge. Evan, I said as softly and calmly as I could. Can we do it without... I couldn't say it, and Evan didn't make me.
The odds of not detonating are a lot better if you did.
Do it without... what?
Ben was having a hard time following. Not his fault. He was still flailing in the unthinkable place like a poor swimmer caught in a riptide.
Killing her first, Evan explained.
Chapter 39. Ben and I convened the latest Oh We're Screwed planning meeting in the hallway. Ben ordered everybody else to go across the parking lot and hide in the diner until he gave them the all clear. Or the hotel blew up, whichever came first. Sam refused. Ben was stern. Sam teared up and pouted. Ben reminded him that he was a soldier and a good soldier follows orders. Besides, if he stayed, who was going to protect Poundcake and Dumbo? Before he left, Dumbo said,
I'm the medic.
He'd figured out what Ben was up to.
I should do it, Sarge.
Ben shook his head.
Get out of here, he said tersely.
Then we were alone. Ben's eyes would not stay still. The trapped cockroach. The cornered rat. The falling man off the cliff and no scrawny shrub to grasp.
Well, I guess the big riddle's been answered, huh?
He said.
What I don't get is why they didn't just waste us with a couple of Hellfire missiles. They know we're here.
Not their style, I said.
Style?
Hasn't it ever struck you how personal it's been, from the beginning? There's something about killing us that gets them off. Ben looked at me with sick wonder.
Yeah, well, I can see why you'd want to date one of them.
Not the thing to say. He realized it immediately and quickly backed off.
Who are we kidding, Cassie? There's nothing really to decide except who's going to do it. Maybe we should flip a coin.
Maybe it should be Dumbo. Didn't you tell me he trained in field surgery at the camp? He frowned.
Surgery? You're kidding, right?
Well, how else are we? Then I understood. Couldn't accept, but understood. I was wrong about Ben. He had dropped farther than me into that unthinkable place. He was 5,000 fathoms down. He read the look on my face and dropped his chin toward his chest. His face was flushed. Not embarrassed so much as angry, intensely angry. The anger that's past all words. No, Ben, we can't do that. He lifted his head. His eyes shone. His hands shook.
I can.
No, you can't. Ben Parrish was drowning. He was so far under, I wasn't sure I could reach him. Wasn't sure I had the strength to pull him back to the surface.
I didn't ask for this. He said. I didn't ask for any of this. Neither did she, Ben.
He leaned close, and I saw a different kind of fever burning in his eyes.
I'm not worried about her. An hour ago, she didn't exist, understand? She was nothing, literally nothing. I had you, and I had your little brother, and I had Pound Cake and Dumbo. She was theirs. She belongs to them. I didn't take her. I didn't trick her into getting on a bus and tell her she was perfectly safe and then stuff a bomb down her throat. This isn't my fault. It isn't my responsibility. My job is to keep my ass and your ass alive for as long as possible, and if that means somebody else who is nothing to me dies, then I guess that's what it means.
I wasn't holding up well. He was too deep. There was too much pressure. I couldn't breathe.
That's it, he said bitterly. Cry, Cassie. Cry for her. Cry for all the children. They can't hear you, and they can't see you, and they can't feel how really bad you feel, but cry for them. A tear for each of them. Fill up the fucking ocean. Cry. You know I'm right. You know I don't have a choice. And you know Ringer was right. It's about the risk. It's always been about the risk. And if one little girl has to die so four people can live, then that's the price. That's the price.
He pushed past me and limped down the hall to the broken door, and I couldn't move. I couldn't speak. I didn't lift a finger or frame an argument to stop him. I'd reached the end of words, and gestures seemed pointless. Stop him, Evan. Please stop him, because I can't. In the safe room underground, their faces lifted up to me, and my silent prayer, my hopeless promise. Climb onto my shoulders. Climb onto my shoulders. Climb onto my shoulders. He wouldn't shoot her, because of the risk. He'd smother her. Place a pillow over her face and press until he didn't need to press anymore. He wouldn't leave her body there. The risk. He would carry it outside, but he wouldn't bury it or burn it. The risk. He would take it far into the woods and toss it on the frozen ground like so much trash for the buzzards and crows and insects. The risk. I sank down the wall and drew my knees to my chest, ducked my head, and covered it up with my arms. I stopped my ears. I closed my eyes. And there was Vosh's finger slamming down on the button, Ben's hands holding the pillow, my finger on the trigger. Sam. Megan. Crucifix soldier. And Ringer's voice speaking out of the silent dark.
Sometimes you're in the wrong place at the wrong time, and what happens is nobody's fault.
And when Ben came out, all torn up and empty, I would get up, and I would go to him, and I would comfort him. I would take the hand that murdered a child, and we would grieve for ourselves and the choices we made that weren't choices at all. Ben came out. He sat against the wall 10 doors down. After a minute, I got up and went to him. He didn't look up. He rested his forearms on his upraised knees and bowed his head. I sat next to him. You're wrong, I said. He twirled his hand. Whatever. She did belong to us. They all belong to us. His head fell back against the wall.
Hear them? Those mother-effing rats.
Ben, I think you need to go. Now, don't wait till morning. Take Dumbo and Pound Cake and get to the caverns as fast as you can. Maybe Ringer can help him. He listened to her, always seemed a little intimidated by her, even awed. He laughed from a spot deep in his gut.
I'm kind of busted up right now. Broke. I'm broke, Sullivan.
He looked at me.
And Walker is in no shape to do it.
No shape to do what?
Cut the damn thing out. You're the only one here who has half a chance.
You didn't?
I couldn't.
He laughed again. His head broke the surface and he took a deep, life-giving breath. I couldn't. Chapter 40 The room where she lay was colder than a walk-in freezer, and Evan was sitting up now, watching me as I walked in. A pillow on the floor where Ben had dropped it, and me picking it up and sitting at the foot of Evan's bed. Our breaths congealing and our hearts beating and the silence thickening between us. Until I said, Why? And he said,
To blow apart what remains.
to break the final, unbreakable bond. I hugged the pillow to my chest and rocked slowly back and forth. Cold, so cold.
No one can be trusted, I said. Not even a child.
The cold bored down to my bones and curled inside the marrow.
What are you, Evan Walker? What are you?
He wouldn't look at me.
I told you.
I nodded.
Yes, you did, Mr. Great White Shark. I'm not, though. Not yet. We're not going to kill her, Evan. I'm going to pull it out, and you're going to help me.
He didn't argue. He knew better.
Ben helped me gather the supplies before he left to join the others in the diner across the parking lot. Washcloth, towels, a can of air freshener, Dumbo's field kit. We said goodbye at the stairway door. I told him to be careful. There were some slippery rat guts on the way down.
I lost it back there, he said,
lowering his eyes and scrubbing his foot across the carpet like an embarrassed little boy caught in a lie.
That wasn't cool.
Your secret is safe with me. He smiled.
Sullivan?
Cassie? In case you don't, I wanted to tell you.
I waited. I didn't push him.
They made a major mistake, he blurted out. The dumb bastards, when they didn't start by killing you first.
Benjamin Thomas Parrish. That was the sweetest and most bizarre compliment anyone's ever given me. I kissed him on the cheek. He kissed me on the mouth. You know, I whispered, a year ago I would have sold my soul for that. He shook his head.
Not worth it.
And for 1/10,000th of a second, all of it fell away. The despair and grief and anger and pain and hunger. And the old Ben Parrish rose from the dead. The eyes that impaled, the smile that slayed. In another moment, he would fade, slide back into the new Ben, the one called Zombie. And I understood something I hadn't before. He was dead, the object of my schoolgirl desires, just as the schoolgirl who desired him was dead.
Get out of here, I told him. And if you let anything happen to my little brother, I'll hunt you down like a dog. I may be dumb, but I'm not that dumb.
He disappeared into the absolute dark of the stairwell. I went back to the room. I couldn't do this. I had to do this. Evan scooted back in the bed until his butt touched the headboard. I slid my arms beneath Megan and slowly lifted her, turned, and then lowered her carefully onto Evan, leaning her head back into his lap. I picked up the spray can of air freshener, a delicate blend of essences, and saturated the washcloth. My hands were shaking. No way could I do this. No way I couldn't.
A 5-pronged hook, Evan said quietly, embedded beneath the right tonsil. Don't try to pull it out. Get a good grip on the wire, make the cut as close to the hook as you can, then pull the hook out slowly. If the wire comes loose from the capsule...
I nodded impatiently.
Kaboom, I know, you already told me that.
I opened the med kit and took out a pair of tweezers and surgical scissors. Small, but they seemed huge. I clicked on the pen light and stuck the butt end between my teeth. I handed Evan the washcloth reeking of pine. He pressed the cloth over Megan's nose and mouth. Her body jerked, her eyelids fluttered open, her eyes rolled to the back of her head. Her hands, folded primly in her lap, twitched, became still. Evan dropped the cloth onto her chest.
If she wakes up while I'm in there... I said around the flashlight, sounding like a very bad ventriloquist.
She wakes up.
Evan nodded.
100 ways it can go wrong, Cassie.
He tilted her head back and forced her mouth open. I stared down a glistening red tunnel the width of a razor and a mile deep. Tweezers in my left hand, scissors in my right. Both hands the size of footballs.
Can you open it any wider? I asked.
If I open it any wider, I'll dislocate her jaw.
Well, in the grand scheme of things, a dislocated jaw is better than being able to pick up our pieces with this pair of tweezers, but whatever.
This one?
Touching the tonsil gently with the end of the tweezers.
I can't see.
When you said right tonsil, you meant her right, not my right, right?
Her right, your left.
Okay, I breathed. Just wanted to make sure. I couldn't see what I was doing. I had the tweezers down her throat, but not the scissors, and I didn't know how I was going to stuff both in the tiny mouth of this little girl.
Hook the wire with the end of the tweezers, Evan suggested. Then very slowly lift it up so you can see what you're doing. Don't yank. If the wire disconnects from the capsule...
Dear Jesus Christ, Walker, you don't have to warn me every 2 minutes what happens if the freaking wire disconnects from the freaking capsule. I felt the tip of the tweezers catch on something. Okay, I think I've got it.
It's very thin. Black. Shiny. Your light should reflect...
Please be quiet. Or in pen light speak.
We'll be quiet.
My whole body was shaking, but my hands, miraculously, had become rock steady. I forced my right hand into her mouth by pushing against the inside of her cheek, maneuvering the tips of the scissors into position. Was that it? Did I actually have it? The wire, if that was the wire shining in my light, was as thin as a strand of human hair.
Slowly, Cassie.
Shut up. If she swallows it, I am going to kill you, Evan, seriously. I had the wire now, pinched between the tines of the tweezers. I could see the tiny hook embedded in her inflamed flesh as I tugged. Slow, slow, slow. Make sure you cut on the right end of the wire, the claw end.
You're too close, he warned me. Stop talking and don't breathe directly into her mouth.
Right, so instead I think I'm going to punch you directly in yours. 100 ways it could go wrong, he said. But there's wrong ways, really wrong ways, and really, really wrong ways. When Megan's eyes flipped open and her body bucked beneath mine, we went down a really, really one.
She's awake! I yelled unnecessarily.
Don't let go of the wire!
He shouted back, necessarily. Her teeth clamped down hard on my hand. Her head whipped from side to side. My fingers were trapped inside her mouth. I tried to hold the tweezers still, but one hard tug and the capsule would pull free.
Evan, do something!
He fumbled for the rag soaked in air freshener. I shouted, No, hold her head still, moron! Don't let her...
Let go of the wire, he gasped.
What? You just said don't let go of the...
He pinched her nose shut. Let go? Don't let go? If I let go, the wire might twist around the tweezers and pull free. If I don't let go, all the turning and twisting and whipping around might yank it free. Megan's eyes rolled in her head. Pain and terror and confusion, the constant mix the others never failed to deliver. Her mouth flew open and I jammed the scissors down her throat. I hate you right now, I breathed at him. I hate you more than I hate anyone else in the world. I felt like he needed to know that before I snapped the scissors closed. In case we were vaporized.
Do you have it? He asked.
I have no freaking clue if I have it.
Do it.
Then he smiled.
Smiled?
Cut the wire, Mayfly,
he said. I cut the wire. Chapter 41.
It's a test, Evan said.
The green liquid gel cap-looking thing lay on the desk safely, we hoped, sealed inside a clear plastic baggie, the kind your mom used in the long-gone good old days to keep your sandwich and chips fresh for lunch period.
What, like human IEDs are still in the R&D phase? Ben asked.
He was leaning on the sill of the busted-out window, shivering, but someone had to watch the parking lot and he wasn't letting anyone else take the risk. At least he had changed out of the blood-soaked, hideous, it was hideous before it was blood-soaked, yellow hoodie, and into a black sweatshirt that almost brought him back to his pre-arrival, buffed-out period. From the bed, Sam giggled hesitantly, unsure if his beloved zombie leader was making a joke. I'm no shrink, but I guessed Sam's had undergone some transference due to seriously unresolved daddy issues.
Not the bomb. Evan answered. Us. Great, Ben growled. First test I've passed in 3 years.
Cut it out, Parrish, I said. Who passed the law that said jocks had to act stupid to be cool? I know for a fact you were a National Merit finalist last year.
Really?
Dumbo's ears perked up. Okay, I shouldn't make remarks about his ears, but he did appear to be dumbfounded.
Yes, really, Ben said with a patented Parrish smile. But it was a very weak ear. Aliens invaded.
He looked at Evan. His smile died, which his smile usually did when he looked at Evan.
What are they testing us for?
Knowledge.
Yeah, that would be the purpose of a test. You know what would be really helpful right now? If you knock off the enigmatic alien routine and get the fuck real. Because every second that goes by and that thing doesn't go off,
nodding to the baggie,
is a second that doubles our risk. Sooner or later, and I'm leaning towards sooner, they're coming back and blowing our asses to Dubuque.
Dubuque?
Dumbo squeaked. He didn't get the reference and that frightened him. What was wrong in Dubuque?
Just a town, Dumbo, Ben said. A random town.
Evan was nodding. I glanced over at Poundcake filling the doorway, his mouth hanging open slightly as his big head ping-ponged to follow the conversation.
They will come back, Evan said. Unless we fail the test, so they don't have to. Fail it? We passed, didn't we?
Ben turned to me.
I feel as if we passed. How about you?
Failing means we took her in all fat, dumb, and happy, I explained. And then got our asses blown back to Dubuque.
Dubuque,
Dumbo echoed, mystified.
The absence of detonation can mean only one of three things, Evan said. One, the device malfunctioned. Two, the device was incorrectly calibrated. Or three,
Ben held up his hand.
Or three, someone in the hotel knows about the bomb children and was able to remove it, put it in a plastic baggie, and conduct a seminar on how to instill panic and paranoia among the dopey humans. The test is to see if we have a silencer among us.
We do!
Sam yelled. He jabbed his finger at Evan.
You're a silencer!
Something you absolutely can't know for sure if you vaporize the joint with a couple of well-placed hellfire missiles,
Ben finished. Which raises the question, Evan said quietly.
Why would they suspect such a thing?
A silence settled over the room. Ben drummed his fingers on his forearm. Poundcake's mouth snapped closed. Dumbo tugged on an earlobe. I rocked back and forth in the chair, plucking at Bear's paw. I didn't know how I came into possession of Bear. Maybe I grabbed him while Poundcake was moving Megan into the adjacent room. I remembered him getting knocked to the floor, but didn't remember picking him up.
Well, it's obvious, Ben said. They must have a way of knowing you're here, right? Otherwise, you run the risk of taking out your own players.
If they knew I was here, there would be no need for a test. They suspect I'm here.
Then I got it, and getting it did not bring me any comfort.
Ringer.
Ben's head whipped toward me. The slightest breath of wind would have toppled him from his perch. She's been captured, I said. Or Teacup? Or both? I turned to Evan because the look on Ben's face was too much to bear.
That makes the most sense, Evan agreed.
Bullshit! Ringer would never give us up!
Ben barked at him.
Not willingly, Evan said.
Wonderland, I breathed. They've downloaded her memories. Ben came off the sill then, lost his balance, staggered forward, knocked against the edge of Sammy's bed. He was shaking, and not from the cold.
Oh no, 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 no. Ringer has not been captured. She's safe, and Teacup's safe, and we are not going there.
No, Evan said. We're already there. I slid out of the chair and went to Ben. One of those moments when you know you have to do something, but you have no idea what.
Ben, he's right. The reason we're alive right now is the same reason they sent Megan.
What is it with you?
Ben demanded.
You buy into everything he says like he's Moses come down from the mountaintop. If they think he's here for whatever reason, then they know he's a traitor and would still send us packing to Dubuque.
Everybody looked at Dumbo, waiting for it.
They don't want to kill me, Evan said finally.
He had a sad, sick look on his face.
That's right, I forgot, Ben said. That would be me.
He pulled away from me and shuffled back to the window, leaned his hands on the sill and studied the night sky.
Stay here, we're done. Bug out, we're done. We're like 5-year-olds playing chess with Bobby Fischer. He swung back around to Evan.
You could have been spotted by a patrol, followed here.
He pointed at the baggie.
That doesn't mean they have ringer or cup. All it means is we're out of time. Can't hide, can't run. So the question circles back to the same question it's always been. Not if we're gonna die, but how. How are we gonna die? Dumbo, how do you want to die?
Dumbo stiffened. His shoulders squared, his chin came up.
Standing up, sir!
Ben looked at Poundcake.
Cake, do you want to die standing up?
Poundcake had come to attention, too. He nodded smartly. Ben didn't have to ask Sam. My little brother simply stood up and very slowly and deliberately gave his commanding officer a salute. Chapter 42. Oh, brother. Guys. I tossed Bear on the desk. I've been here before, I told the macho brigade. Run equals die, stay equals die. So before we go all okay corral on this, let's consider the third option. We blow it up. That suggestion sucked all the air from the room. Evan got it first, nodding slowly, but clearly not happy with the idea. Lots of variables. 1,000 ways it can go wrong, only one way right. Ben cut right to the gooey guts of the problem.
How? Who has the duty of breathing on it and getting vaporized?
I'll do it, Sarge,
Dumbo said. His ears had turned red, like he was embarrassed by his own courage. He smiled shyly. He'd finally gotten it.
I've always wanted to see Dubuque.
Human breath isn't the only source of CO2, I pointed out to the National Merit finalist.
Coke!
Dumbo fairly shouted.
Good luck finding one of those, Ben said.
It was true. Along with anything alcoholic, soft drinks were one of the first casualties of the invasion.
A can or a bottle, yes, Evan said. Cassie, didn't you tell me there was a diner next door?
The CO2 canisters for the fountain drinks, I started.
Are probably still there, he finished.
Attach the bomb to the canister?
Rig the canister to dispense the CO2?
A slow leak?
In a confined space?
The elevator, we said in unison.
Wow, Ben breathed. Brilliant. But I'm a little unclear on how this solves the problem.
They'll think we're dead, zombie,
Sam said. The 5-year-old understood, but he lacked Ben's burden of experience in outwitting Vosh and company.
Then they check it out, they find no bodies, they know, Ben said.
But it will buy us time, Evan pointed out. And my guess is by the time they realize the truth, it'll be too late.
Because obviously we're just too darn clever for them? Ben asked.
Evan smiled grimly.
Because we're going to the last place they'd think to look.
Chapter 43. There was no time for more debate. We had to pull the trigger on Operation Early Checkout before the fifth wave pulled the trigger on us. Ben and Poundcake left to fetch a CO2 canister from the diner. Dumbo took hall patrol. I told Sam he had to watch Megan, her being a pal from the old days on the school bus. He asked for the gun back. I reminded him that having the gun didn't help so much the last time. He'd emptied the magazine without even nicking the target. I tried to give him Bear. He rolled his eyes. Bear was so 6 months ago. Then Evan and I were alone. Just him, me, and a little green bomb made 3. Spill it. I ordered him.
Spill what?
Eyes all big and innocent as Bear's. Your guts, Walker. You're holding back.
Why do you-
Because that's your style. Your modus operandi. Like an iceberg, 3/4 under the surface, but there's no way I'm letting you turn this hotel into the Titanic. He sighed, avoiding my glare.
Pen and paper?
What? Time for a tender love poem? That was his style, too. Every time I edged too close to something, he deflected by telling me how much he loved me, or how I saved him, or some other swoony, pseudo-profound observation about the nature of my magnificence. But I grabbed the pad and pen from the desk and handed them over because, at the end of the day, Who minds getting a tender love poem? Instead, he drew a map.
Single story, white, or used to be white, wood frame, I don't remember the address, but it's right on Highway 68, next to a service station. Has one of those old metal signs hanging out front, Haviline Oil or something like that.
He tore off the sheet and pressed it into my hand. And why is this the last place they'd look for us? I was falling for the deflecting technique again, not that Haviline Oil had anything cloyingly poetical about it.
And why are you drawing me a map when you're coming with us?
In case something happens.
To you, what if something happens to both of us?
You're right. I'll make 5 more.
He started on the next one. I watched for 2 seconds, then grabbed the pad out of his hand and threw it at his head.
You son of a bitch, I know what you're doing.
I was drawing a map, Cassie.
Rigging a detonator from a soda fountain Mission Impossible style, really? While we all run like hell for the Haviline sign with you in the lead on your broken ankle and stabbed leg, sporting 106-degree temperature?
If I had 106-degree temperature, I'd be dead, he pointed out.
No, and you want to know why? Because dead people have no temperature.
He was nodding thoughtfully. God, I've missed you.
There it is, right there. Just like the Walker Homestead, just like Camp Ashpit, just like Vosh's death camp. Whenever I've got you cornered.
You had me cornered the minute I laid.
Stop it.
He stopped.
I sat on the bed next to him. Maybe I was going about this all wrong. You catch more flies with honey, my grandmother always said. The problem was that womanly wiles weren't something I carried in my wheelhouse. I took his hand. I looked deeply into his eyes. I considered unbuttoning my shirt a bit, but decided he might see through that little ploy. Not that my ploys were that little.
I'm not letting you pull another Camp Haven on me, I said, adding what I hoped to be an alluring purr to the timbre. That isn't going to happen. You're coming with us. Pound Cake and Dumbo can carry you.
He reached up with his other hand and touched my cheek. I knew that touch. I'd missed it.
I know, he said. The expression in his chocolatey, gah, eyes was infinitely sad. I knew that look, too. I'd seen it before, in the woods when he confessed who he really was.
But you don't know everything. You don't know about Grace.
Grace, I echoed, pushing his hand from my cheek, forgetting all about the honey. I liked his touch too much, I decided. I needed to work on not liking it so much, and also work on not liking the way he looked at me as if I was the last person on Earth, which I actually thought I was before he found me. That's a terrible thing, an awful burden to put on someone. You make your whole existence dependent on another human being, and you're asking for a world of trouble. Think of every tragic love story ever written. And I didn't want to play Juliet to anybody's Romeo, not if I could help it. Even if the only candidate available was willing to die for me and sitting right beside me holding my hand and looking deeply into my eyes with the not-so-gah-now eyes the color of melted chocolate. Plus being practically naked under those covers and possessing the body of a Hollister dude. But I'm not getting into all that.
Grace again. You kept mentioning Grace after I shot you, I told him.
You don't know Grace.
Well, that stung. I never knew he was so religious or judgmental. The two usually go hand in hand, still.
Cassie, I have to tell you something.
You're a Baptist?
That day on the highway after I let you get away, I was very afraid. I didn't understand what happened, why I couldn't do what I came to do. Do what I was born to do. It didn't make sense to me. And in a lot of ways, it still doesn't make sense. You think you know yourself. You think you know the person you see in the mirror. I found you, but in finding you, I lost myself. Nothing was clear anymore. Nothing was simple.
I nodded. I remember that. I remember simple.
In the beginning, after I brought you back, I really didn't know if you were going to make it. And I would sit there with you and I'd think, maybe she shouldn't.
Gee, Evan, that's so romantic.
I knew what was coming, he said.
And that sure was something clear and simple.
He grabbed both my hands and pulled me close, and I fell 1,000 miles into those damn eyes, which is why the honey technique doesn't fit me. I'm more the fly when I'm around him.
I know what's coming, Cassie, and until now I thought the dead were the lucky ones. But I see it now. I see it.
What? What do you see, Evan? My voice quivering. He was scaring me. Maybe it was the fever talking, but Evan was acting very un-Evanish.
The way out. The way to finish it. The problem is Grace. Grace is too much for you, for any of you. Grace is the doorway, and I'm the only one who can walk through it. I can give you that. And time. Those two things, grace and time. And then you can finish it.
Chapter 44. Then Dumbo, with perfect timing, popped his head into the room.
They're back, Sullivan! Zombie said—
He stopped. Obviously, he'd interrupted an intimate moment. Thank God I hadn't unbuttoned my shirt. I pulled my hands from Evans and stood up.
Did they find a canister?
Dumbo nodded.
They're putting it in the elevator now.
He looked at Evan.
Zombie said, anytime you're ready.
Evan nodded slowly.
Okay.
But he didn't move. I didn't move. Dumbo stood there for a few seconds.
Okay,
he said. Evan didn't say anything. I didn't say anything. Then Dumbo said,
See you guys later, in Dubuque.
He backed out of the room. I whirled on Evan.
All right, remember what Ben said about the enigmatic alien thing?
Then Evan Walker did something I'd never seen him do or heard him say, to be accurate.
Shit,
he said. Dumbo was back in the doorway, slack-jawed, red-eared, and in the grasp of a tall girl with a cascade of honey-blonde hair and striking Norwegian model-type features, piercing blue eyes, full, pouty, collagen-packed lips, and the willowy figure of a runway fashion princess.
Hello, Evan, Cosmo Girl said.
And of course her voice was deep and slightly scratchy like every seductive villainess ever conceived by Hollywood.
Hello, Grace, Evan said.
Chapter 45. Grace. A person. Not a prayer or anything close to being connected to God. And armed to the teeth. She had Dumbo's M16 in addition to the hefty sniper rifle hanging from her back. She shoved the kid into the room and then blew out my eyesight with her megawatt smile.
And you must be Cassiopeia, Queen of the Night Sky. I'm surprised, Evan. She's nothing like I pictured. Kind of a ginger. Didn't know that was your type.
I looked at Evan. Who the hell is this person?
Grace is like me. Evan said. We go way back. 10 centuries, give or take. Speaking of taking,
Grace motioned for my rifle. I tossed it at her feet. Sidearm, too, and that knife strapped to your ankle under the fatigues.
Let them go, Grace, Evan said. We don't need them.
Grace ignored him. She gave my rifle a little kick and told me to toss it out the window with the Luger and the knife. Evan nodded at me as if to say, better do it. So I did. My head was spinning. I couldn't grab hold of a single coherent thought. Grace was a silencer like Evan, that one I could hug tight. But how did she know my name? And why was she here? And how did Evan know she was coming? And what did he mean by Grace is the doorway? The doorway to what?
I knew she was human.
Grace was back on Evan's favorite subject.
But I never imagined how completely human she was.
Evan knew it was coming, but he tried to stop it anyway.
Cassie?
Fuck you and the horse you rode in on, you fucking alien motherfucker.
Colorful, imaginative,
nice.
Grace motioned with Dumbo's rifle for me to sit. Again, Evan shot me a look. Do it, Cassie. So I sat on the bed next to his, beside Dumbo, who was breathing through his mouth like an asthmatic. Grace remained in the doorway so she could keep an eye on the hall,
Maybe she didn't know about Sam and Megan in the next room, or Ben and Poundcake waiting for Evan in the elevator downstairs. I understood Evan's strategy then. Stall. Buy time. When Ben and Poundcake came up to see what the hell is going on, that'll be our chance. I remembered Evan taking out an entire squad of fifth waivers, outgunned and outnumbered, in pitch darkness, and thought, no, when they show up, that will be her chance. I studied her, the way she leaned against the jamb with one ankle thrown casually over the other, golden tresses flowing over one shoulder, her head turned slightly to display for our admiration her stunning Nordic profile, and I thought, sure, makes sense. If you can download yourself into any sort of human body, why not pick an impeccable one? Evan, too. In that sense, he was nothing but a big phony. And that's weird to think about. Deep down, the dude who gave me the jello knees was an effigy, a mask over a faceless face that probably 10,000 years ago looked like a squid or something.
Well, they did tell us there was risk living so long as humans among humans, Grace said. Tell me something, Cassiopeia. Don't you think he's perfectly perfect in bed?
Why don't you tell me? I shot back. You extraterrestrial slut.
Feisty,
Grace said to Evan with a smile. Like her namesake.
They have nothing to do with this, Evan said. Let them go, Grace.
Evan, I'm not even sure I understand what this is. She left her post and floated, there's no other word for it, to his bedside.
And nobody is going anywhere until I do.
She leaned over and took his face in her hands and kissed him long and lingering on the lips. He fought her, I could see that. But she immobilized him with her otherworldly uber wiles, which she carried in spades in her wheelhouse.
Did you tell her, Evan?
She murmured against his cheek, though she made sure I could hear.
Does she know how all of this ends?
Like this, I said, and launched myself at her, leading, as I usually did, with my head, aiming the hard crown part of it at the soft temple part of hers. The impact knocked her sideways into the closet doors. I ended up sprawled across Evan's lap. Perfectly perfect, I thought, a little incoherently. I pushed myself up and Evan wrapped his arms around my waist and yanked me back down. No, Cassie! But he was weak and I was strong, and I ripped free easily and jumped from the bed onto her back. That was a big mistake. She grabbed my arm and hurled me across the room. I smashed against the wall beside the window and plopped straight down on my ass, sending a hot jolt of pain up my back. From the hallway, I heard a door fly open and I shouted, "Get out, Sam! Get zombie! Get—" She was gone before I could get the second "get" out. The last time I saw someone move that fast was at Camp Ashpit, when the phony soldiers from Wright-Patterson spotted me hiding in the woods. Like, cartoon fast, which might be humorous if not for the reason she bolted.
Oh, no you don't, bitch, not my little brother.
I raced past Dumbo, past Evan, who had thrown off the covers and was struggling to swing his badly wounded self out of bed, into the hall, which was empty, not a good thing, not good at all. Then two steps to Sam's room. And when my fingers touched the handle, a wrecking ball smashed into the back of my head and my nose smacked into the wood. Something went crunch, and it wasn't the wood. I stepped backward, blood pouring down my face. I could taste my blood, and somehow it was the taste that kept me upright. I didn't know till then that rage had a taste, and it tasted like your own blood. Cold fingers locked around my neck, and I watched my feet leave the ground through a shower of red rain. Then I was soaring down the length of the hallway, coming down hard on my shoulder and rolling to a stop a foot from the window at the far end. Grace, stay there. She was standing by Sammy's door, a lithe shadow down a dimly lit tunnel, shimmering on the other side of the tears that welled uncontrollably and spilled down my cheeks to mix with blood.
Leave my brother alone.
That adorable little boy?
He's your brother?
I'm sorry, Cassiopeia, I didn't know. Shaking her head in mock sadness. Like they mocked every decent human thing. He's already dead. Chapter 46. Three things happened.